In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Life Podcast, methylene blue madness, the gut-healing mega newsflash, homemade morphine, cheap blood sugar hacks, training 2 versus 4 times per week, and a whole lot more. Faith, family, fitness, health, performance, nutrition, longevity, ancestral living, biohacking, and a whole lot more. Welcome to the show.
It's been mass chaos, but in like all the good ways. Like I'm actually having a lot of fun with what I'm doing. So yeah, how about you, dude?
Good. Well, I know you're smack dab in the middle of launching your company, Hanu Health. I'm smack dab in the middle of my rebrand of my company, which you may have noticed if you heard the podcast introduction, is now Ben Greenfield Life at BenGreenfieldLife.com rather than Ben Greenfield Fitness, because, you know, I decided I want to get fat and eat Twinkies and sit on the couch and watch what's a good news show, Tucker Carlson. Or
you're like losing Glenn so Beck. Much fans right now.
I don't even know.
I don't think Glenn Beck's on anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, we're going to become a political show. No, we're going to get a lot more into things beyond fitness, basically lifestyle optimization. So because of that, though, Jay, you know, everybody needs a good cognitive pick me up, at least in my opinion, to get through these tough times. And it turns out that there's something going around the internet that many people have asked me about when it comes to enhancing one's mitochondria and cognition. And I'll tell you what, if you want a little bit of entertainment while you're listening to this show, go Google methylene blue Ben Greenfield, because there's about 10 articles that hit the internet this week, including headlines such as "Doctors Slam Influencers for Ingesting Fish Tank Cleaner to Fight Aging" and "Medical Expert Issues Warning About Fish Tank Disinfectant Craze." I started to see these just like pour into my inbox lately. Have you seen any of these, Jay?
Yeah, no, I saw the ones that you sent over, and it was funny because it was, you know, you know, it's the one that like Dr. Slams people for ingesting, you know, the fishbowl cleaner. It was you and then my friends Lauren and Renee, the biohacker babes, mm-hmm. and I sent it over to them, and I was like, ah, look at you guys.
Yeah.
To the crush of it's media. So yeah, that one's been going around.
It's supposedly quite dangerous, and so if you read some of these articles, they get into this fact that a lot of fitness influencers and Instagram personalities, etc., are hawking the health benefits of something called methylene blue, which they describe in these articles as this like dangerous antifungal dye often used to clean fish tanks, and basically, each article gets into the idea that it causes a horrific and possibly dangerous meth inside people's mouth and turns their lips blue and may cause potentially deadly complications for people who take antidepressants. And despite hydroxychloroquine actually being derived from a methylene blue precursor, total dismissal of claims that somehow the dye could be beneficial in treating or modulating cases of COVID-19. And these just go on and on. Everybody, you know, all these so-called medical experts essentially, you know, vilifying this stuff. So I figured I would clear up the air here, or at least turn the air blue. So let me explain. Methylene blue, which I actually do indeed use. I typically will use, there's one company called Troscriptions that makes a great one that they compound with a little bit of nicotine, a little bit of caffeine, a little bit of CBD. I tell you what, it's a great cognitive pick-me-up. I love it. Yeah, it's called a Troche. It works well. There's another guy whose Troche I use sometimes. I don't know if he sells it on the internet. He's a doctor I met down in Phoenix, Dr. Mike Major down in Phoenix. He's got another one that I use, and a lot of times I'll combine it with a walk in the sunshine, because when this methylene blue is in your bloodstream, the photonic light from sunlight can help to enhance the effects of methylene blue on the mitochondria. Okay, so here's the deal with methylene blue. It's also known as methyl thioneninium chloride. And it is indeed true that it can act as an antifungal on surfaces, which is why it's popular as a fish tank cleaner. But don't go buy fish tank cleaner. If you get pharmaceutical grade methylene blue, which is what's used in a lot of these popular supplements now that have been getting a lot of biohackers thrown under the bus, methylene blue has been proven in research to protect the brain by acting as an electron donor to specifically complex 1 through 4 of the mitochondria and directly increasing adenosine triphosphate or ATP production, your body's cellular energy currency, even in the absence of, say, caloric intake, and to do so even at an even greater extent when it is exposed to infrared light, such as if you use one of these trochees when you're in an infrared sauna or if you are out in the sunlight. Now, the reason that acts that way is that methylene blue is an electron donor. Okay, it donates electrons to something called coenzyme Q, which is another part of the mitochondria, and also to a part of the mitochondria called cytochrome C. So it increases the activity of something called cytochrome oxidase and increases oxygen consumption and increases heme synthesis and also stimulates glucose metabolism and increases the amount of NAD produced by the mitochondria. So not only is it producing greater amounts of ATP, it's increasing the amount of NAD that's produced, which can also act as a DNA protectant. It acts as an antioxidant, meaning that methylene blue interacts with oxygen, makes water. That decreases the amount of superoxide radicals that are produced during the process of oxidative phosphorylation. That's your body's energy creation process. Okay, it can also trap leaking electrons that are produced by mitochondrial inhibitors, and it can preserve the metabolic rate by bypassing certain blocked points of electron flow that happen during mitochondrial respiration. Okay, so there's a lot going for mitochondrial health and overall energy levels when you have methylene blue in your system, which is also why a lot of functional medicine doctors will use methylene blue in some of their treatments, or a lot of people use it as a nootropic or a cognitive pick-me-up. And the other interesting thing about it is that there is a law of diminishing returns. In the same way that you shouldn't use like these big infrared light lamps for more than about 20 minutes per day because it can produce excess electrons and that can saturate your electron transport chain in your mitochondria. I mean, it can produce reactive oxygen species. Well, with methylene blue, same thing. At high doses, it can indeed promote oxidative stress. In addition to that, and this is why there's all this chatter about, oh, if you're on an antidepressant, it's going to kill you. It is one of those things that may cause too much serotonin to flood the cleft between the neurons. So it could cause serotonin toxicity in someone who's already on an SSRI. But the research on the mitochondrial benefits and the energy-producing benefits of methylene blue, and I don't sell methylene blue. I've got no stock in a methylene blue company. I'm just saying I like it as a nootropic because of all the different things that it does. Furthermore, it can have antimicrobial action. Okay, that's why it was first used back in the 1800s to treat malaria, and that's why it was eventually used as the precursor for what we now know as hydroxychloroquine, which has been used, you know, some would argue not, but I would say yes, it has been used as something that can be effective for COVID. It's also an antifungal agent and it can inhibit candida. So in like women often will have like yeast candida, or people who drink gallons of kombucha from Whole Foods or have too much sugar or whatever, they can have candida. Methylene blue is good for that. I would say the number one thing that it does, though, that has actually been studied in clinical trials at relatively low doses is an increase in cognitive performance. And this was like a 5 to 10% increase in cognitive performance that was found along with a decrease in the rate of neurodegeneration. So I'm going to drop the mic right now and say that these articles are silly. And I think that the reason they got so popular was because they were able to put up a bunch of photos of influencers with like blue mouths and blue tongues. And so obviously these news flashes were ripe for you know like virally spreading. So anyways, I don't know. You gonna stop using methylene blue anytime soon, Jay?
Well, this is the way I look at it, man. It's super clickbaity and it's an easy clickbait. You see the blue tongues. I mean, you hear about, you know, the potential for death, and people are gonna click on it and they're gonna, you know, start slamming, yeah, just like the doctors are slamming. you and everybody else who's in this article. We see all the same thing with infrared light. You know, a few years ago, we saw the same thing with like microdosing,
sun tanning your perineum, your butthole.
I remember that one. Yeah. So like, you're going to see this. So no, like for me, like I'm very risk averse just in like whatever, you know, I put in my body and to the extent of like, I just don't do it super often. So like with methylene blue, with nicotine, like those are things that I might use, like let's say once or twice max a week. And it's not saying like, oh, you have to limit yourself to that, but I just do it just because for me, too much of something, I'm just really sensitive to stuff like that. Like for instance, those trochees that you use, the transcription ones, I love them, but I can only take like a fourth to a half of the troche max because I just get a little bit jittery.
Weak sauce.
Yeah, I know, I'm such a weak one, but you know, I'll guzzle down, you know, 20 ounces of coffee in one gulp and I'm good to go. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But you know, I think it's all just kind of this clickbait thing that, you know, it happens initially and then we'll see it fade away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could talk until we're blue in the face. See what I did there? Or we could go ahead and jump into this week's news flashes. We have one special guest before we jump into the news flashes. And then we're going to go into Q&A with our live Clubhouse audience. We'll get to come on, ask some questions, and we'll rock and roll. So all the show notes for today's show are going to be at bengreenfieldfitness.com/441. And let's go ahead and bring James on. James Newcomb is the guy who produces this podcast. And I wanted to have a quick chance here to hear from James, because I know how many people, even people who are listening to the show right now, are interested in starting a podcast or interested in like maybe having somebody who can edit their audio. James does a great job for us. He does my audiobooks as well. And I thought, you know what? There's so many people that could really benefit from knowing of James's existence that we should bring him on so he can explain what he does. James, what's up?
Hey, Ben. Thanks for having me. And I just checked and Fox News is still spouting out nonsense. So there's never been a better time to start your own podcast. Get it off the ground. Speak your truth into the world.
Maybe at some point in your audio editing wizardry, you can figure out this 5-second delay that Squadcast is throwing at us right now. But anyways, go ahead.
Well, it's easy if you know how, Ben. And that's why you have an editor on board. And that's what I've been doing for many years, 4 years for your show to be exact. And what can I say? It's I'm make my living doing something that I love. So who can say that? I'm really, really fortunate to be able to say that. Now, the name of our business is the GSD Network. And GSD is short for Getting Shit Done. And that's just what we're all about. It's no frills. It's nothing fancy. We take the audio that people record and we just give it a nice haircut, get it ready to ship. So I absolutely appreciate this opportunity to share a little bit about what we do on your show.
I like it. So if people wanted a podcast editor, James, or wanted to start a podcast and they needed somebody in their back pocket standing outside Starbucks with an iPhone and a microphone and a Tesla, what's the URL again where they can find you?
The URL to find us is gsd.network, gsd.network. And whether you need some help getting your shows ready to ship for public consumption, or you need a good swift kick in the pants via some coaching, we are here to serve.
GSD.network. All right, you guys. So check out James. You may also recommend or recognize James's voice because he was the guy who had big enough balls to be able to record all like 8,000 hours of my last book, Boundless. So that's James. And that's why you might be familiar with his voice if you've listened to my audiobook, because he was the man for that. All right, James, thanks for filling us in. GSD Network, Getting Shit Done Network. I like it. My mom hopefully isn't listening in to me curse on my own show. But anyways, thanks, James.
Thank you, sir.
Well, folks, this is the part of the show where we jump into some incredible news flashes and interesting information that came across my desk this week as I've been pouring through research articles and journals and books and things that people send me and sharing the things that are most intriguing with you. Now, I should let you know from an audio standpoint that my dear podcast sidekick, Jay, I'm just going to blame it all on him, is experiencing a few internet difficulties. So we have a little bit of a delay in his audio. So we'll see whether or not he's able to join us for much of his witty banter or not. But either way, we're going to do this. So as I let you know, in the introduction, I did want to give you a gut-healing mega newsflash on today's show, because there's a lot that has happened lately in the realm of the gut biome, and specifically healing the gut biome. So I want to fill you in on some of the things going on right now, because I know a lot of people deal with bloating, deal with gas, deal with brain fog that maybe doesn't manifest as gastrointestinal issues, but manifests instead as cognitive issues. And so the first article that I want to make you aware of was written by Keenan Erickson, who's a chronic disease specialist and a personal trainer and an author who wrote a great article at betterhumans.pub. And betterhumans.pub is a wonderful resource for just basically delving into a lot of body and brain and human optimization tactics. Now, this gentleman who wrote the article had been experiencing severe gut dysbiosis, an imbalance of bacteria in the gut, and stomach and gastrointestinal issues that were manifesting in basically, you know, things like chronic fatigue syndrome and panic attacks and anxiety and fatigue and even inability to exercise. And I've come across a lot of folks who have experienced things like that. And what he laid out was a really beautiful and very clear and succinct method to address gut issues like this that I think was spot on in terms of the science behind it. Because when you look at your gut, I mean, it's a whole ecosystem of bacteria. We're talking like 23,000 genes that influence your biology. But then if you look at the gut biome, we're looking at more like 3.3 million genes, because you have so many foreign critters in your tummy, these bacteria. So it's incredibly complex. And basically, the way that this guy managed to fix his gut was he did a few different things. First of all, even though the research and the agreement amongst gastroenterologists and gut researchers is a little bit controversial regarding the use of probiotics, this particular individual did a combination, and I really, really like this combination, and I've used something very similar to it successfully in the past for people with gut issues, as well as myself, a combination of a very good probiotic combined with a soil-based probiotic. Now, in this case, he used one called P3OM. P3OM is made by a company called Bioptimizers. I like that probiotic. It's a well-formulated strain. It has L-plantarum in it, which is particularly effective at eliminating gut pathogens. I tend to use one right now called Seed, S-E-E-D, is my go-to probiotic because it's wrapped in this algal medium that allows it to survive the acidic nature of the stomach and make its way almost down to the colon. And I do quite well taking about three of those right when I get up in the morning. And if I'm traveling, because airline travel can disrupt the gut microbiome significantly, I will double up on that and take three in the morning and three in the evening. Now, what that probiotic and many other probiotics are missing is the bacterial strain that's found in soil. And that's where you can throw in a soil-based probiotic. There's a lot of different soil-based probiotics out there. One of the ones that I like is made by Josh Axe's company, Ancient Nutrition. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. They do a really great soil-based probiotic. But that 1-2 combo of Seed plus the Ancient Nutrition soil-based probiotic, I think, is a really good 1-2 combo. There are other companies that make soil-based probiotics, but those are the two that I like, are Seed and Ancient Nutrition. And you can take those at the same time. So you can do a couple capsules of the soil-based probiotic from Ancient Nutrition, three of the Seed, do that in the morning. And if you're traveling, do it in both the morning and in the evening. This individual wrote this article also began to widely expand their intake of ferments, meaning like kimchi, sauerkraut, miso, natto, yogurt. And I don't think that's a bad option, with the only thing being that if your gut issues manifest with a lot of gas and bloating, you may actually have small intestine bacterial overgrowth. And if that's the case, some of these fermented vegetables can almost be too much. They can produce too much gas, too much methane, etc., in which case you need to stick to basically like lower fiber probiotic foods. And I would be referring to things like miso, yogurt, fermented fish sauce, things along those lines. And if you do not have any of the symptoms of SIBO, you can get away with basically, you know, doing a whole wide variety of probiotic infused foods like kimchi and sauerkraut, etc. Now, one thing that you should be aware of is that there is a wonderful, relatively new book called The Gut Fix by Dr. William Davis, who I'll be having on my podcast soon, because of all the different probiotic type of foods that you could consume. I think top of the totem pole is his gut healing yogurt. He has the whole recipe in that book. I or my wife or somebody in our house makes a fresh new batch about every 2 weeks. And this particular yogurt is very, very unique. What you do is you start, in our house we use goat milk just because we have a mommy goat right now who's turning out lots of milk. You could use coconut milk technically, although if you use coconut milk, you got to add a little bit of sugar because coconut milk doesn't contain the lactose sugar that will feed the probiotic or that will feed the bacteria. You can also use, if you want a thicker yogurt, like half and half or cream, for example. But you take your yogurt, or you take your milk rather, and into your milk, you basically powder and drop in there about 10 tablets of something called L-Retiri, which is a probiotic strain made by BioGaia. You can buy this stuff on Amazon. I'll put links in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/441 for all the ingredients. And then you put a few tablespoons of inulin, which is a prebiotic that will help to feed the bacteria. And you add that all to around 32 ounces or so of your goat milk or your regular milk or your half and half or your cream or your coconut milk. And again, if you use coconut milk, you have to add a little bit of extra sugar to it so that the bacteria have something to eat and munch on. And then you do a long, at least relative to making yogurt, a long fermentation. You basically will put it in a food dehydrator or an oven or a yogurt maker. And you want to do it at somewhere right around 100 to 105 degrees for 36 hours. And when you do it for 36 hours, and you read all the details about this in Dr. William Davis's new book, The Gut Fix, you get an amplification of this L-Retiri bacteria by the billions and billions, and a huge surge in a bunch of gut healing nutrients that are going to be found in that yogurt, particularly oxytocin. And oxytocin is that feel-good hormone that's released when you, for example, when you have an orgasm, or women when you breastfeed. So I guess they could call this orgasm yogurt. But basically, it vastly increases oxytocin, does a great job stabilizing and feeding the gut. You get better sleep, you get better exercise performance, you get better mood. It's just basically an amazing homemade yogurt. And the cool thing is, it's cheap, because once you've bought those probiotics once, all you do to make a new batch is you save just a few tablespoons of the old yogurt. And then you put that into the milk, toss it in the food dehydrator or the yogurt maker or the oven at 100 to 105 degrees, and you can make a whole new fresh batch. So that was the second part of the recommendation, in addition to taking the probiotic combined with the soil-based probiotic, is this wonderful yogurt. And I have about 4 to 6 ounces of this yogurt every single day. I'll either put it in a smoothie or put it on top of a salad or have some with steak at dinner. Doesn't matter. I am absolutely addicted to it, and it's amazing. Next, the strategy that this person used, I really do like. It comes from Dr. Zach Bush, who's a previous podcast guest, and it's the use of what's called lignite. This is actually an extract from the soil, and this was something that was originally launched and designed by Dr. Zach Bush, who's really smart, and it relies upon this process of cellular signaling called redox signaling, which is the process of oxidation and reduction that involves the transportation of electrons for your cells and for your mitochondria. Well, redox signaling is also involved in the way that your gut biome's bacteria communicate and coordinate with one another. And if you have a lot of bad bacteria in your gut, or certain cells are malfunctioning, the communication between mitochondria basically gets impaired, and you can get a lot of gut issues. And this is particularly problematic for people who have a high intake of herbicides, pesticides, glyphosate, etc. Well, if you look at lignite extract, which is just a fancy name for all these materials that are present in dirt, what lignite does is it allows this cellular communication to be restored by repairing the cell's tight junctions. And this is like a liquid. You would take a shot, for example, before you have a meal or a few times a day. And in people who specifically have leaky gut, it can really work well. I don't use this stuff anymore. because I personally feel that the colostrum that I now use and that I actually toss it into my smoothie every morning, I think it does an even better job at fixing up leaky gut cells and at helping to restore proper cellular communication in the gut. But it's the same type of tactic, whether you use this Restore product by Dr. Zach Bush, whether you use the colostrum, I use the Keon brand of that, that you combine with the fermented foods, that you combine with this soil-based probiotic and the regular probiotic. These are all steps that if you have gut issues, can do a really good job fixing things. I've had a lot of gut issues in my life, and these are steps that have vastly improved my own gut health. Now, the last component is like a temporary component, but it can really do a good job pushing the reboot button on the gut. It's a hypoallergenic liquid diet that you follow for anywhere from 3 to 14 days. It's called an elemental diet. Now, what an elemental diet is it's basically a diet that eliminates a lot of fiber. It eliminates a lot of the things that would potentially irritate things like SIBO or Crohn's or ulcerative colitis or celiac disease. It's basically a liquid-based, nutrient-rich formula. And there's a few different ways that you can do it. In my book, Boundless, I do have instructions for a DIY elemental diet using certain things that you would find around your kitchen. But really, the easiest way to do it is to use either the Elemental Heal powder, which is made by Dr. Michael Ruscio. The other one that I really like is Thorne's SGS powder. And you basically, I know it sounds boring, but you drink an elemental diet smoothie for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. While you continue to take the colostrum, you take these two different probiotics, you use a little bit of this yogurt that I just described in this elemental diet. And then the other thing that you can toss in there is, especially if you're trying not to lose muscle on a diet like that, about 20 to 40 grams of essential amino acids on a daily basis. That's what I do with people who I help walk through an elemental diet is I throw in a ton of aminos, I throw in a ton of colostrum, I throw in some of this gut healing yogurt, those two different probiotics I described. And if you go through all those steps, and I'll link to the article as well in the show notes and along with some of the other things I've mentioned, you can literally take a gut that's just ravaged and torn up and within a couple of weeks feel like you have a born-again stomach. It's pretty amazing. So anyways, that's the first thing that I wanted to tell you guys about when it comes to the gut. By the way, Jay, you still with me? Or
yeah, no, I love the idea of that yogurt. So one of the things that I'm going to do, so I think I've mentioned this in the past, that the probiotic that I use is called Pendulum, and it's made with Akkermansia, so it's really good for glucose control. So I like to do a lot of testing, like A-B testing with and without it, and then utilization of other probiotics to look at glycemic control, especially with the use of like Levels or like a CGM. And I love the addition or the additive of the inclusion of this yogurt with my Pendulum and then also add in a bit of Keon colostrum to it. I think that's a really cool fix. I don't really have gut problems per se, or at least like I'm not super sensitive to that if I do, but I'd just be really interested to see kind of with the combination of all those things that I'm using, if there is a substantial effect or at least one that I could feel. So yeah, cool stuff.
Yeah, and the only other thing I'd throw in there from a quantification standpoint is if you do think you have a leaky gut, you can actually test the intestinal permeability of your small intestine. There's a test called the Intestinal Permeability Assessment. Yeah, it's made by Genova Diagnostics. I'll link to it in the show notes. You just drink this pre-measured amount of what's called lactulose and mannitol. These are two different sugars. And then you pee for the next 6 hours. Not 6 hours of continuous peeing, which would be a boring time in the bathroom, but you just every time you pee over 6 hours after you've drank it, you collect this urine sample, and the degree of intestinal permeability based on how much of these non-metabolized sugar molecules wind up in the urine versus not in the urine, which would indicate they've permeated the intestinal mucosa, can basically indicate whether or not you have intestinal permeability. So it's kind of a cool test, and I'll link to that one in the show notes made by Genova Diagnostics. So let's keep going, because there's a lot of other things that have happened in the past couple of months regarding the gut. The next thing I want to talk about is this idea that a lot of people think that they are gluten sensitive when in fact they are not. For the past few years, multiple studies have come out showing that people who think they're gluten sensitive aren't really gluten sensitive. Instead, they are sensitive to the fermentable carbohydrates found in wheat. and the fermentable carbohydrates found in what is called FODMAP-containing foods. FODMAP, that's an acronym that stands for fermentable oligosaccharide, disaccharide, monosaccharide, and polyols. Now, this would include things like wheat, barley, apples, onions, many vegetables that are often considered healthy but are yet fibrous and very fermentable, even a lot of sugars, and things like fructose in fruit, especially dried fruit. Like if you get a lot of gas when you have apples, when you have onions, when you have garlic, and when you have dry fruit, and when you have wheat, all of those are pretty good signs that you have potential sensitivity to FODMAPs. And a lot of times, people don't get the relief from eliminating gluten per se. They get the relief from eliminating these FODMAP-containing foods. Now, this has been known for some time, but this recent study they did last month was they put people on a low FODMAP diet, and then they basically gave them pure gluten powder. We're talking like, you know, South Park might make your dick fly off and fly around the room and explode gluten powder. Okay. If anybody's familiar with that South Park episode,
I am not at all. I was so confused with that.
It's pretty funny. Anyways, though, I'll link to that episode in the show notes. Yeah. You know, South Park gets a little bit edgy, but it is a pretty, pretty funny little scene about the gluten powder. So anyways, one group received rice flour, you know, obviously no gluten, and the other group received gluten powder. And the group that was on a low FODMAP diet with the gluten powder added in, they didn't have issues. They only had issues if they had a lot of FODMAPs in their diet. And so this just goes to show that you might think you have gluten intolerance. You might be eliminating a lot of foods that you think you shouldn't be eliminating and getting on a gluten-free diet. You may or may not still be having issues, but what you need to know is that often it's not getting rid of the gluten. It's going on a low FODMAP diet. And you can easily Google low FODMAP. You can print a food chart and hang it on your refrigerator or keep an image of it on your phone that shows you all the foods that are high in FODMAPs, you know, like apples and onions and garlic and wheat and things like that. And then you just avoid the FODMAPs. It's super, super simple to do so once you have your head wrapped around it. Now, what's interesting was a second study that came out last month looked at whether or not people on a low FODMAP diet could combat the inevitable constipation that often occurs when people eat a low FODMAP diet if they introduced the type of fibers that are not fermentable. Now, this is really, really interesting because a lot of people will have gut issues. They'll switch to a low FODMAP diet and then they'll wind up with constipation because when you switch to a low FODMAP diet, you do get rid of a lot of fibers that would normally be a part of your diet. And so this study thought, well, why don't we add the fibers back in, but make sure that all the fibers that people are eating are low FODMAP fiber. And so in this case, they use sugar cane. Now, obviously, if you're tracking your blood glucose and you don't want to get the diabetes, then you would actually not want to use a super, super sweet fiber like sugar cane as your primary source of fiber.
Though it does sound fun.
But it does sound fun just to be gnawing on sugar cane. I'm sure you could impress your friends with your giant stick of sugar cane sticking out your backpack.
That's right.
But anyways, there are other ways that you can augment stool bulk because this study did find that people on a low FODMAP diet could get rid of their constipation when they use sugar cane as a fiber. Now, if you look at some other sources of fiber that don't irritate the gut but arguably don't have the same impact on your blood sugar levels as sugar cane, there are a few. And these are a few that I really, really like. One is sea moss gel. That's a powerhouse source of cellular fiber, very low in calories, very satiating, and it allows you to have bulk in your stool that you might not have if you've cut out a lot of fiber because fiber doesn't agree with your gut. So sea moss gel. There's a company, I use this stuff, Akasha, A-K-A-S-H-A. I think we have a discount code with them somewhere. I'll find it and put it in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/141. But Akasha, I really like. I always have a few jars of that Akasha sea moss gel. I'll put a dollop of it with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, get my fiber. Another one that I really like is pumpkin puree, like canned pumpkin puree. I get a BPA-free canned organic pumpkin puree. I order that one on Amazon. And again, really, really great for adding to smoothies, having on the side with some steak or fish. It tastes great. You know, you put a little cinnamon and nutmeg on there and drizzle it with just a touch of honey. You feel like you're eating baby food pumpkin pie. But basically, that's another one. And then the final one that I use that's a good source of like a combination of soluble and insoluble fiber, increases your ability to take a good poop but doesn't cause the fermenting and the bloating and the gas, is chia seed gel. Chia seed gel. And what I really like, because it gives me a good poop the next day, is when my family's having ice cream or whatever for dessert, I just have this giant mason glass jar full of soaked chia seeds in the refrigerator. And I basically will just like have some of these chia seeds. I'll put a little stevia, a little sea salt on them. Sometimes I'll sprinkle a little bit of like a quarter bar of dark chocolate or whatever in there. And that's a really, really good source of non-fermentable fiber as well. So sea moss gel, pumpkin puree, chia seeds combined with a low FODMAP diet, it's just magic for the gut. You ever try any of those type of fibers before, Jay? Those ones I described, like the pumpkin or the chia or the sea moss?
Yeah, I guess I wasn't necessarily using them with the intention of what you've mentioned, but I have. I haven't tried sea moss though, but chia and pumpkin puree are basically, they become semi staples within my diet.
Yeah, you should totally try the sea moss stuff. Yeah. It's really cool. It's super easy. My kids like this. You can get just the sea moss that you then soak in water and drop in your Vitamix or your blender and blend after you've soaked it for a day. Or you can get just like the pre-made gel that they sell on their website. You might be able to get on Amazon too, but it's Akasha. It's a great brand.
Yeah, interesting.
And I'll tell you a funny story about the chia seeds. Mm-hmm. So I this was like 3 weeks ago. I took out the chia seeds to soak them, and I left them on the counter in the mason glass jar like I usually do for about a day. And I came back, and they were just all kind of floating in the water. They hadn't done their cool little chia seed pet thing. And so I thought, well, gosh, like what kind of crazy mutant chia seeds are these? And I opened the jar, and I tried to feel they're still crunchy. I'm like, ah, crap. So I kept it soaking. Came back the next day. They were still hard. I thought, okay, I'm just going to go one more day. Maybe something funky's going on here. Maybe these are just like the chia seeds from, I don't know, like, what do you call
chia
it?
Seeds.
Like X-Men chia seeds, or maybe they're like hardcore Russian army chia seeds or something.
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, so finally, on the third day, my wife's like, why are you soaking poppy seeds on the counter? I said, poppy seeds? You know, it's an understandable mistake. Poppy seeds look a little bit like chia seeds.
Yeah.
And so anyways, so I thought, oh, gosh, oh, crap. I just wasted a bunch of poppy seeds. So, you know, I'm dumping the water out of the mason jar, and I thought, you know, I should use a strainer, strain these poppy seeds out, because maybe I could still use them for something. You know, maybe I could like toast them and use them on a salad or whatever. So I strain the water out, and I've got the poppy seeds in a little colander that I use for straining. I set the poppy seeds on the side. I'm looking at the water, and I thought, gee, I could drink some poppy seed water. Maybe that's good for you. And so, I drank the water, and the whole rest of the day, I was like super chill, not like stoned, but I was like chill. Like,
yeah,
nothing was really bugging me. I couldn't really go that hard during my workout in the afternoon. Like, I just felt like I just was like relaxed, bro. And so I thought, huh, I want, and I thought, you know, poppy seeds do have implications in terms of like their opium, you know, content. They're an opiate.
Yeah. Was
right?
It
they
like
really
an analgesic feel? Like, did you feel like a little bit numb?
Yeah, that's the best way I can describe it. Not like hardcore, like I just took morphine numb, but yeah, there was something going on with opioids. And so I thought, huh. And so I went and looked at the research, and it turns out that soaking poppy seeds in water results in like 50% of the morphine and 50% of the codeine from the poppy seeds winding up in the water. And then I found another case study and review, and I'll link to this in the show notes, showing that many people have actually experienced something close to like morphine-based intoxication when using poppy seed tea, right? Not just water. If I would have heated up the water and drank that whole thing, I guarantee, like, I could have wound up in the hospital potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it would have been a lot of morphine, a lot of opioids. But some people use poppy seed tea as a way to wean themselves off of addictions to opioid-based painkillers. Some people will use poppy seed tea as a way to kill pain in the way that they would if they were taking opiate, you know, because it's like one of those cheap kitchen hacks for homemade morphine. And so I thought, whoa, that's interesting. So what I'm getting at here is like zombie apocalypse comes along, and let's say, you know, you got your carbine on your front porch, you know, shooting the zombies or the Chinese black helicopters or whatever, and you know, a stray bullet catches you in the leg, and you got no painkillers, no morphine, no codeine to snort. And so you think, oh, but I do have all these poppy seeds that I bought in bulk on Amazon last year when I bought all my ammo and put them in the pantry in case I was in a gunfight. And then you go and you warm up your poppy seeds and you make tea out of them and you drink your homemade liquid morphine. What do you think?
I love that. That's where your mind went to, a zombie apocalypse. And this is the way to mitigate the effects of getting bit or shot or whatever it may be. I guess if you get bit, you're done. You're a zombie now.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's, you know, gun battle, I could see how that might work. You know, what's really interesting about it is that my wife recently has been making like a flaxseed tea to help out with gallbladder functioning because she found out that she was having a little bit of like gallbladder sludge and a little bit of slower functioning. And I'm sitting there thinking, we don't want to mix up our poppy seeds, which we actually don't have any, but we don't want to mix those up with flax because you might get a bit of a different effect there than a flaxseed tea. So, that's pretty crazy. But I love how you just were like, dude, I might as well just chug the water. Don't want to get rid of the water. And next thing you know, you're semi-high on poppy seed water.
It wasn't. I was semi-high. And considering like you can get 10-pound sacks of poppy seeds for like nothing on the internet. Like, to me, just where my prepper mind goes is, hey, add it to the medicine cabinet just in case, but be careful, kids. Okay, so one last thing regarding the gut stuff that we were talking about, and then I have a few other just quick things I wanted to go through with people. Okay, so this is interesting because I've recommended glutamine for people who have irritable bowel syndrome for some time. And this latest study on glutamine, it was really fantastic. So what they found was that when you take the low FODMAP diet that I just described, the amelioration of irritable bowel syndrome symptoms is vastly amplified when you add 5 grams of L-glutamine 3 times a day. 5 grams of L-glutamine 3 times a day. Now, considering the inexpensive nature of L-glutamine and the fact that you can get giant tubs of L-glutamine powder for next to nothing, and considering how nourishing it is to the gut, I'm telling you, cause you know, I've already been using this with some of the clients who I work with who have gut issues. Probably the number one population of clients I work with, or the number one problem among clients I work with, is they have gut issues. And so I've began to recommend not only the probiotics that I mentioned and that colostrum in the morning, a lot of colostrum, but then this glutamine. All I have them do is just grab, and sometimes I'll just dump it straight into the mouth. There's the 5 gram scoop that comes with the tub of glutamine, and you just basically take every time you have a meal, 5 grams of glutamine. Super simple. And it like the research is amazing. So if you have gut issues, definitely consider adding just cheap ass glutamine into the equation. And it seems to do a really good job, especially if you're already eating a low FODMAP diet. And I hope that's going to be helpful to some people. So anyways, the glutamine is an interesting one. Yeah. So, and again, like super duper affordable, easy to get. It's kind of like, you know, I was talking with Dr. Mercola about this. You know, he actually is not into all these expensive like NMN and NR and NAD supplements. And he showed me some of the research and some of what he's been digging into for just increasing your NAD levels either naturally, you know, which is like, you know, he was describing to me how the number one way to increase your NAD levels is to fast for 12 to 16 hours every day, do some kind of really hard weight training or high intensity interval training, you know, multiple times per week. And then I'm trying to remember, I think the last one was eating a wide variety of fermentable foods, which you already tackled for NAD. But then for pennies on the dollar, you can get a nicotinamide powder. Basically you just take a certain amount, very small amount of this powder, this nicotinamide powder, which you can buy on this fringe website, that starts with an A and rhymes with Ramazon. And basically you just use like, get a little scale. You might need a little jewelry scale, 'cause you just take 25 to 50 migs and you get the same increase in NAD as you do from like the $70 bottle of nicotinamide riboside that you get from, you know, Life Extension Foundation or whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. Cause yeah, that stuff racks up. I mean, as far as expense goes. And so if there's any ways to do it that are much cheaper and then also provide other health benefits, I mean, we already know the benefits of heavy movement of weight or of our body, you know, for HIIT and all the other things you mentioned, they hold other benefits just outside of taking, you know, a single $70 pill or whatever. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think it is pretty sick. So, you know, hopefully we're saving some people money. Get your nicotinamide powder, get your glutamine powder. A lot of this stuff, you know, doesn't have to be super expensive to hack the body, folks. Can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Indeed.
Speaking of expense, here's another interesting article that came out. Insects as a viable protein source for human consumption. I posted this one, and a lot of people were like, unfollow, not going to eat worms, bro. Like, I wasn't shoving them down your throat. I was just mentioning that this recent study showed that insects are a sustainable protein-dense food source and a viable alternative to conventional animal-derived proteins. And in this study, they actually looked at a really, really good tracer test, protein-derived amino acid score, which is kind of like a gold standard way to test for protein digestion. They looked at amino acid absorption kinetics. They looked at skeletal muscle protein synthesis rates, and they found that ingestion of a meal of basically, in this case, mealworm-derived protein was followed by rapid protein digestion, a big increase in amino acid absorption, a big increase in muscle protein synthesis rates, and essentially the equivalent of what you'd get from milk protein concentrate, which is an animal-derived protein, which is actually really fantastic because they've done other studies, and I think I've talked about them on the show before, showing that the protein quality of insects is pretty high. Particularly cricket, moth, and grasshopper are three of the really sustainable type of digestible proteins, although termite had the highest digestibility score. You know, you could eat some termites and also, you know, save your house from getting eaten.
Yummy.
But this mealworm was super high. And so, you know, it's so funny because, you know, we see everybody making the Beyond Burgers, the Impossible Burgers, or complaining about cow methane, or complaining about available land. That's an argument for another day. I'm a big regenerative egg guy, and I feel like we could feed a lot of people on a lot less land with a lot less, you know, carbon emission that would be considered problematic if we engage in more regenerative agriculture. But I think that that going forward, I think at some point, there will be certain populations of humans who realize how foolhardy it is to not be relying upon the world's greatest mass of bioavailable protein, specifically insects, mealworm, right, crickets, grasshoppers, you know, you name it. So I don't mind being a voice to encourage people, you know, who are out there in the nutrition industry and supplements business, like, you know, look into this as a viable source of protein, and it's really not that expensive either.
Yeah, dude, Bear Grylls, he's been beating on this drum for a while, so listen to Bear Grylls on this one. But also too, one thing that's really interesting, it's very cultural, right? So if you look at our culture, let's say domestic United States of America, this sounds, you know, like an awful option for protein, but there are other cultures where this is not an awful option. This is a part of fine dining. I mean, I think about, wasn't it John the Baptist who had a nutritional locus. Profile of locus? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And we all know he was swole, John the Baptist.
That's right.
I don't know. Actually, I saw he. What was the movie I was watching? It's this TV show about Jesus's apostles, the Chosen, I think it's called.
Oh yeah, that's
it's
a good flick. It's really good.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good flick. I watched that with my kids last year. A little series. I don't watch much TV, but that one I found intriguing. All right, so anyways, a few other things that I want to mention. You know, we'll see if we have time for Q&A or not. There's so many things I want to go through today, but stick with me if you're on Clubhouse. We might even if we just do one question, we'll try and squeeze one in. So next, a recent study, and two recent studies related to reducing your blood glucose. So the first one, I've had a lot of eyebrows raised at me when I say what I've said in the past, and that is that I don't take metformin because even though it has some really good life extension properties, the trade-off in terms of disruption of the gut microbiome, decreasing the ability to produce new mitochondria, and decreasing the ability to get muscle protein synthesis post-exercise dictates that I think the cons outweigh the pros unless you have full-on diabetes, in which case, you know, metformin could be a good idea. But I've always said, you know, I prefer two things instead, bittermelon or dihydroberberine. I think bittermelon or dihydroberberine are two of the best, most fantastic alternatives to metformin. And so this recent study actually studied bittermelon, because me personally, I've tested my blood sugar scores and my blood glucose responds just as favorably to bittermelon as it does to metformin. The only thing that shoves my blood sugar lower than bittermelon, which is the stuff that we use in Keon Lean, is an intense cold bath or cold shower. So anytime I have carbs, you know, carrot cake, sourdough bread, sweet potatoes, yams, glass of wine, you name it, I pop two Keon Lean and my blood sugar is right as rain. This recent study showed that bitter gourd extract, aka bittermelon extract, the effects on lowering blood glucose was significant. In this case, they looked at hemoglobin A1C, 3-month snapshot of blood sugar levels, and found that there was a significant hypoglycemic effect. As a matter of fact, the reason they did this study was they were trying to figure out what you would do in people who failed to respond to anti-diabetic medications. You know, when anti-diabetic drugs are ineffective, what do you do? But anyway, so this bittermelon extract actually works. And this latest study backed up what I've been saying for a long time. The hypoglycemic effect of bittermelon is so strong that I actually don't even recommend you use it before a workout, because your glucose might get too low. But with carbs, it's great. Now, let's say you can't afford it and you want something a little bit more inexpensive, you know, since we're talking about cheap blood sugar hacks today. The other one that works really well, and this was another recent study, they looked at glycemic response. They looked at appetite society satiety. They looked at gastric secretions, and they looked at gastric emptying after people ate bread, right? Bread being a food that notoriously would increase blood sugar levels. And in this case, what they did was they gave people lemon juice with water as a control and with tea as a control. Lemon juice led to a 1.5-fold increase of the volume of gastric contents 30 minutes after the meal, meaning the gastric emptying was 1.5 times faster. It elicited a 35% lower blood glucose concentration and an increase in satiety, meaning the appetite perception and the gastric volume correlated and corresponded to better appetite satiation in response to the lemon juice, along with an increase in gastric secretions, indicating that it helped people to digest food better. So if you're up the creek without a paddle, you don't have all these fancy supplements, you don't have bittermelon extract, you don't have your digestive enzymes, you don't have your bitters, all you need is lemon. Or lemon juice.
It's fascinating.
And you can add a little bit to a morning glass of water like I do. You can, like, you know, if I'm at a restaurant, you know, and I don't want to have a cocktail, I just order a glass of bitters on the rocks, a little squeeze of lemon. Like, don't underestimate the power of some of these cheap hacks like lemon juice or nicotinamide powder or L-glutamine powder or some of these things that a lot of people don't talk about so much because they don't make a lot of people a lot of money. But the lemon juice absolutely works. I think the Keon Lean is probably a little bit better. I think the 1-2 combo of both for carbohydrate control could be great. But it's nice to see how some of these simple things actually work. And in the last few months, you know, all these research studies I'm talking about, these are brand new research studies. You know, it's just been proven to work. So
yeah.
So lemon juice to the rescue.
That one's really cool.
Lemon juice to the rescue.
I really like that. For me, it's interesting. There's a couple things that I want to try here. The first would be, I like the combination of take some Keon Lean, then drink lemon juice, like during your meal, pre-meal, whatever way works best. And then afterwards, just get in a walk. I feel like that three combo. And if you're, hey, listen, you don't want to, you know, spend the money on the Keon Lean, sorry, Ben and Keon, then yeah, just the lemon juice and then a walk afterwards. Like, that seems like a really inexpensive, if not free-ish, way of managing blood glucose. So I think it's a cool combo.
All right. So here's a time hack one. This was a really cool study in the Journal of Strength Conditioning Research. And what they looked at was, let's say that you only had two times of the week available to work out rather than another person that might have four times of the week available to work out. but you still wanted to get the same type of strength improvements and the same type of muscle gain or muscle maintenance improvement. Could you take all of the things you'd normally do working out four times a week and compress that into just working out twice a week for a longer period of time, right? So instead of doing, let's say, 4 45-minute strength training sessions, could you get away with 2 90-minute strength training sessions because those are the only two times you can make it to the gym during the week? Well, it turns out you can. It turns out that training frequency isn't a big deal when you actually equate the training volume. Okay, and in this case, they had folks doing a full body workout that involved squat, bench press, chest press, lat pull downs, and seated rows. And one group exercised 4 days of the week with a lower number of sets, and the other group worked out 2 days of the week with a higher number of sets. And the group that worked out fewer times, but just with a higher training volume, wound up having results that were just as good. Essentially, it was a washout. There was no difference between the groups, which is kind of cool to know, right? So don't beat yourself up if your friend's going to the gym, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and you can only make it Monday and Friday. That's okay. You need to have a bigger strength training session, but it turns out that frequency really doesn't matter that much. It's volume, you know, total number of sets that you do, no matter how you squeeze them in during the week, that really, really matters. You know, there are some cases in which this isn't true. Like, let's say protein, right? Your body can only really absorb and assimilate 30, maximum 40 grams of protein. And some people who are on like an OMAD diet, they'll be like, oh, I'm going to have all my protein at the end of the day. Well, if you're trying to, let's say, gain muscle and you're shooting for what I think would be the gold standard for muscle gain, which would be like 0.8 grams per pound of protein, arguably you are going to not be able to eat and absorb that much protein on a one meal a day protocol, unless you're doing something like, you know, taking little bits of amino acids the rest of the day before that meal or whatever. So that's a case in which the volume is not equated to the frequency because there is a limit to how much protein you can actually absorb and assimilate. But when it comes to working out, it turns out that you can actually absorb, so to speak, all that workout and see just as good results as the people who are training more frequently but with less volume.
Well, it's like,
so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it's the age-old discussion of quality over quantity, right? And so I like the idea of just like when you go and bust your ass and then don't be so bothered with this quantity of workouts, but it's the quality of the workout and it's really the volume that's truly the thing that matters. And it makes all the sense in the world to me intuitively, but I think that it's been passed down upon generation upon generation of this idea that frequency and, you know, being in the gym 5, 6, 7 times a week is what's most important. And it's obviously not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, we're getting a little long in the tooth, but I would be remiss not to have us reply to at least one, maybe two questions from our live audience on Clubhouse. So what do you think? Should we take a couple questions from our live audience here?
I think that would be kind of us, Ben.
This is James Newcomb, the producer again, and the audio from Clubhouse was very poor. And so I'm just going to basically read the questions for you so that you can actually hear them. The first gentleman asks a question. He has an injured hand. He's tried everything under the sun to heal it with no success. And he's asking Ben for some tips on how to heal an injured hand. And it seems like he's tried everything that there is possible to try.
Yeah, I'm always cautious getting into, you know, on the podcast, what's this strange wart on my left earlobe that nobody else has, but I have, and try to steer these questions towards information that might be broadly applicable to a lot of people. And so, yeah, there's a lot of modalities that can work to manage injuries that don't seem responsive to all of the typical, you know, biohacks, red light and rolfing and scraping and BPC 157 injections and ice and heat and vibration and shockwave therapy. I mean, the list goes on and on for everything. But I think that probably the two things from a regenerative medicine standpoint, if you don't really know what regenerative medicine is, you should go listen to my podcast with Tony Robbins, which I'll link to if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/441. The two things that I have seen work best when just about nothing else seems to be working, again, from a regenerative medicine standpoint, would be number one, exosome therapy. Number two, ultrasound-guided nerve hydrodissection. So allow me to explain. Exosome therapy. That doesn't involve using donor cells in your body like stem cell therapy would. So exosomes are extracted from what's called mesenchymal stem cells from humans, and they're sterilized. The resulting solution has these lipids. It's got messenger RNA. It's got microRNA. It's got signaling cytokines. It's got proteins. It's kind of funny because it's basically got a bunch of mRNA in it, and the same people who are like complaining that vaccines with mRNA are going to cause them to grow a third arm are the same people sitting in a medical clinic getting exosomes IVs, which I just think is kind of funny. But anyways, so exosomes, they're typically administered via an IV or direct injection into the treatment area. They work very powerfully. They contain nearly three times the amount of growth factors than stem cells do. They're kind of expensive, but man, like they're anti-inflammatory, they're anti-fibrotic, they're easy to administer. They're available at many regenerative medicine clinics. So injection or IV exosomes, I think, is one thing to look into as far as like something that a lot of people who have tried a whole bunch of stuff but haven't yet tried this could benefit from. Next one is nerve hydrodissection. Dr. Matt Cook at BioReset Medical in San Jose, I think, is one of the best guys for this. There's another guy local to my town who's been trained by Dr. Cook. His name is Dr. Phil Leneau. He's extremely good. I wish more athletes and more injured individuals knew about this. Nerve hydrodissection is a non-invasive technique. And basically what it involves is using an anesthetic or a solution like saline or placental matrix or ozone. And basically what they do is they go in with a needle. You barely feel a thing. They separate the nerve from the surrounding tissue and fascia and adjacent structures. It removes the feeling of pain and discomfort that might be limiting mobility. In many cases, it allows you to take the next step towards physical therapy or return to activity or healing that you'd normally otherwise not be able to do because of the nerve irritation. And I have literally seen people who have had like tennis elbow for 10 years sit up off of Matt Cook's treatment table after like 5 minutes of nerve hydrodissection, big smile on their face, pain totally gone, walk out, pain never comes back. It's nuts. I wish more people knew about it. So those are the two I would say, exosome therapy or nerve hydrodissection, when nothing else seems to be working, I would say are the top two things that could help you from a regenerative medicine standpoint. So great question. Sorry I couldn't really hear you, Demian, but I hope that helps out. And I think that's probably, basically based on my own schedule, about all that we have time for in today's show. However, we always like to give out a goodie to anybody who does leave a review. You can leave a review by going to bengreenfieldfitness.com/441, following any of the links there or anywhere where fine podcasts are found. You can leave a review. If we read your review on the show, that means that you get a handy dandy sweet gift pack from Ben Greenfield Life. And you just email gear@bengreenfieldlife.com. That's gear@bengreenfieldlife.com. And we will get that one out to you. So, Jay, what's our review this week?
Yeah, man, this is one from Slim Rai Rai, and it's called Thank You, Ben. Slim Rai Rai says, great podcast and links towards whichever path you'd like to take towards wellness. I really like Ben and his team. They're easy to listen to and have a great sense of humor. So there we go. I would like to think that they're speaking to me when they refer to your team and the sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you can be funny sometimes, but don't give up your day job, dude. Because honestly, your day job's pretty cool. You guys should stay tuned. At some point, I'll be interviewing Jay because he's got this cool new wearable coming out.
Yeah,
it's called Hanu. But you'll have to check it out. It's gonna be sick. But that's a discussion for another day. But in the meantime, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/441. You can check out the show notes. You can check out the studies. You can leave your own questions, comments, and feedback. I'd love to hear from you. And check out the new website. I think a couple times I said bengreenfieldfitness.com/441, but technically now it's bengreenfieldlife.com/441. So note to self. And Jay, thanks for coming on and battling the internets with me and teaching people how to poop better.
That's right. It's been a blast. And relieve your pain with poppy seed tea. That's always been a good one too.
That's right. You learned how to make your own drinkable morphine. All right, cool. We'll catch you guys on the flip side.
See ya.
More than ever these days, people like you and me need a fresh, entertaining, well-informed, and often outside-the-box approach to discovering the health and happiness and hope that we all crave. So I hope I've been able to do that for you on this episode today. And if you liked it, or if you love what I'm up to, then please leave me a review on your preferred podcast listening channel, wherever that might be. And just find the Ben Greenfield Life episode. Say something nice. Thanks so much. It means a lot.